Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today. We're about 12 hours into free agency. So far, not much madness, except for the trade market getting upended once again. So we're going to talk about the Paul George trade, the Ricky Rubio trade, the Jeff Teague signing in Minnesota, and then some of the best and worst signings of the first 12 hours of free agency. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you that you could follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. As you suspect, we will have a lot on free agency in the coming weeks. Summer league's getting underway. I'm doing some fantasy basketball reaction to all the big moves, so check out FanRag Sports at FanRag Sports on Twitter. Joining me today are both of my co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
It's good. Really, really good. It's good to be back.
Yes, we missed you, Sarah. Glad to have the Dream Team back. Back in action as free agency gets underway.
James Holas is crying.
Yeah. His attempts to take over your spot full-time have been thwarted. He's a little too sad for the Celtics. Once again, almost traded for a superstar, but did not. So let's start with that. Paul George, at about 9:40 Friday night, we're all just refreshing Twitter, waiting for free agency to start, catching up on the latest rumors, and boom, Ramona Shelburne of ESPN says Paul George is traded to OKC. And at first you're like, oh, that's cool. What did they give up? And then you see they only gave up Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. So, Mort. Mm-hmm. What the hell was Indiana doing accepting that little of a return for Paul George?
They pulled a Poles. I am not sure why people pull a Pole. It seems weird. Like, theoretically, if you were a GM and you just had a little bit of assets and you had a go-to attitude, you could have wound up with Jimmy Butler and Paul George this summer. I have no idea what Indiana was thinking. Like, I've heard some rumors afterwards. Or I have read some rumors, I don't have those kind of connections, that, you know, Indiana was pretty scared that he would go to an Eastern Conference team, which is ridiculous, because when you trade George, you're going into a rebuild anyway, so why do you care?
Right.
It makes literally no sense. So, maybe they panicked, I'm not sure. I kind of feel bad for Victor Oladipo, like, he's become the throw-in guy now.
Yeah, well, he's on a pretty terrible contract, so welcome to life when you get overpaid in the NBA. Sarah, you're a Spurs fan. In the last week, the Rockets and Thunder have both acquired top 15 players in the league, and the Timberwolves, you know, last week got Jimmy Butler, too. So how do you feel about being in the Western Conference right now?
Oh, man. It's something, isn't it? It's like a Shark Tank. But I'm more excited for you. I mean, the East is going to be... Man, gosh. The Sixers might really be the 2 seed next year. So congratulations on that, man.
I'm not going that far. But yeah, they are definitely a playoff contender, and that's not a credit to them. where do you see the Spurs stacking up? Obviously we don't know what else is going to happen, and we're waiting on Gordon Hayward, so the Jazz are up in the air, especially. Blake Griffin did resign with the Clippers, so we know, you know, they're not at least going completely into the tank. But again, you've got Golden State clearly at the top, but then you have the Rockets, the Thunder, the Timberwolves, possibly the Jazz. So do you still think the Spurs are the number 2 seed, or are they going to have some competition from Rockets, Timberwolves, Thunder?
Definitely have some competition. I think the Rockets will be right there again. But for right now, yeah, I'm going to leave them as the 2 seed until somebody else proves otherwise. It's just weird. Like you said, we're kind of in a wait and see right now. I didn't think Patty was coming back. I thought Patty was gone for sure. So that's interesting. I just kind of thought they were going to bring somebody else in. And I didn't even get the chance to tell you that I was actually went from not only warming to, but actually almost rooting for Patty to the Sixers.
Really?
Yeah, I was on board. Because I just thought it's kind of like trading George back to Indiana, you know, I thought it was a great situation. If he couldn't be here, then I'd want him to be with Brett, who's not only a former Spurs guy, but coached Patty in the 2012 Olympics. So, and it's a young, talented, up-and-coming team. So I thought that'd be really good, but glad to have him back, obviously.
Yeah.
Now we got to see about Jonathan Powell. Apparently we got a meeting with Iggy, so that's interesting. I don't know. I don't know how it's all going to go. I'd love to steal him from the Warriors just so the Warriors don't have him. And then, of course, he brings great, great things. I wonder, though, what that means for Manu's future. I don't know, Brian. It's too much going on right now.
I'm going to not let Morton troll you about that right now.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to be nice. We are. We have Sarah back for the first time in a while. I'm not going to ruin it by reminding her that Manu is going to retire in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. She's going to fire off like 8 more tweets, too, as soon as we're done here.
That sounds right. So, Morton, you were alluding to this, you know, when you said any general manager with considerable assets probably could have had Jimmy Butler and Paul George this summer. So let's talk about Boston.
Yeah.
Because it seems, you know, that was a pretty not so veiled shot at the one, the only Danny Ainge. After the Paul George news broke, within hours, multiple reporters with Boston ties, including, you know, guys for the Boston Globe, Boston Herald, and Jeff Goodman of ESPN, started leaking all of these trade offers that Boston made. So at the trade deadline, reportedly, they included the Brooklyn Nets 2017 pick, which obviously became the number one pick, along with 3 first round picks. At the NBA draft, they reportedly included 3 first round picks, Jay Crowder, and another starter for Paul George. Indiana reportedly said no. Do you buy those offers actually happened, or do you think this is Ainge trying to spin his way out of, you know, not getting Paul George for peanuts?
B. Because, you know, look, if you have that offer, if you're Indiana, compared to what you took there last night, I mean, you obviously take the first one. Like, okay, so Danny Ainge could theoretically be playing hardball. He could have offered that initially, and then when Indiana came calling, he would just be like, you know, nope, offer's off the table. But if he did that, that would be faulty as well. Like, that would be completely effing stupid. So, no, I don't buy that that offer was on the table at all. He's had every chance this summer to pick up both Jimmy and Paul. Like, the assets are right there. And I've seen Celtics fans, you know, go to the Danny Ainge defense all throughout Twitter. And that's fine. Like, I kind of appreciate a fan base who have a lot of loyalty to their GM. As a former Bulls fan, I'm not sure what that feels like, so that's that's at least positive. But regardless of how you twist it, it's just a bad look. If you could have gotten 2 superstars, and let's just be honest here, given how the East is shaping up right now, it's so bad. If you have Boston getting Jimmy Butler and Paul George, I mean, I'm not putting a cap on how far they can go. They're a finalist team as far as I'm concerned. And if that's just one injury away from actually being the champs.
Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, you know, it also came out, and it's been reported for at least the last couple of days, if not weeks, that they were hoping to sign Gordon Hayward and then trade for Paul George. The same logic probably could have applied for Jimmy Butler. Mm. Obviously, Indiana... That's what baffles me about this trade. Like, Indiana, why 2 hours before free agency starts, why do you make the deal then?
Right.
Because, like, that OKC offer is not leaving the table, right? Like, OKC is going to be like, yeah, you want Victor Oladipo's contract? Take it whatever you want. That's great. But, like, if Boston does sign Gordon Hayward and pitches him saying, like, look, you can come here and then we can get Paul George, then Boston has to give up a lot to get Paul George, right? So, like, at Indiana, just waited a week. You would think once we see how some of these big free agent dominoes start to fall, desperation would take over, and a team might give up more than Victor Oladipo and Sabonis. But then again, maybe Indiana is just really high on those guys, and they said, like, look, you know, whatever... we've been offered, like, we think these two guys are better than 3 first round picks, Jay Crowder and another unnamed starter, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley.
Sure.
Right, I know. So maybe they were going the hometown angle, but it just seems like Kevin Pritchard really jumped the gun here, I guess. And, you know, we don't know. We don't know what he was actually offered. You know, all these Boston reports, Mort, I'm with you. There's no way. Maybe they turned down the thing at the deadline because they were just, they wanted to call Paul George's bluff and they were like, you're not actually going to leave. But there's no way. By the NBA draft, they're turning down 3 first-round picks, Jay Crowder, and another starter for Paul George. There's just absolutely no way. And, you know, maybe my guess would be at that trade deadline, like, we don't know if they offered those picks unprotected, right? Like, he could have offered that Nets pick and said, like, yeah, you can have it, but it's top 10 protected. Mm-hmm. So
that was the problem when he was debating with the Bulls, or negotiating, I should say, with the Bulls.
Right. Like, right.
The Bulls wanted the pick unprotected. Supposedly, Ainge did not. And he, I even believe, I read somewhere, I'm not sure about the credibility of this, but that he even wanted a top 3 protected, which is like, that's a no starter. Like,
right. That defeats the purpose. Exactly. Because at that point, you knew the Nets were very bad, were very likely to have the worst record in the league. So they had like a 65% chance of ending up in the top. So why are you going to, you know, why are you going to gamble on a 35% chance of getting the number 4 pick? Like,
yeah,
it's just not worth it. It's Jonathan Sharks of The Ringer had a good column today about how, like, Danny Ainge has all these assets, but the perfect trade might not come. And, like, those picks are, you know, they sound great on paper. That Nets pick in 2018, the Lakers and Kings, the one they got from the Sixers for the Fultz trade. But, like, those picks might not be as valuable a year or two from now that they are right now, right? Like, the Nets could be better than we expect them to be. Or even if they're not, the East is going to suck, as Sarah mentioned. Like, Indiana's going to be really bad now. Chicago is going to be really bad now. The Knicks are probably going to be pretty bad. Orlando reportedly offering Joe Ingles $15 million a year on a 4-year offer sheet. They're going to be terrible because they're just Orlando. They're always a 30-win team. So, like, they're, even if the Nets are just mediocre, like, they might be the 5th or 6th worst team in the NBA rather than the 1st worst. You know, if Jeremy Lin didn't get hurt last year, they were much better than their record indicated. So that Nets pick, you know, people are always saying, like, yeah, they're going to end up in the top 5. Like, they might not. It's not a guarantee that they're going to. And the Lakers and Kings, same way.
And in regards to the Nets, because they don't have their pick, they have no incentive to lose. So they are going to go all out in free agency to get players in who can make them winners, or as much, you know, as much winners as they can become, obviously. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to be competitive. They're trying to install a winning culture. This is almost like, you know, the perfect storm for them in a positive spin, because after making that god-awful deal with Boston where they just sacrificed their entire future, they also lost any kind of argument for tanking, which is actually pretty decent. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. So now they can insert this winning culture, they can keep building on it, and they can go to their players and say, well, last year we won X amount of games. Let's beat that this year. Let's get higher, because they have nothing to gain otherwise. So I think they're going to be players in free agency here. I wouldn't be surprised, like, tonight or tomorrow we hear something big. And you alluded to, the East is weak as hell. I mean, theoretically, they could be the 10th seed.
Right. Oh, I forgot to mention Atlanta, because when Paul Millsap walked, they're also going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's why the Sixers are going to make the playoffs, because there are 6 teams on paper that are considerably worse than them already.
They lost 3 former or current All-Stars to the West over the past couple weeks. Jimmy Butler, Paul George, and Jeff Teague. Now, Millsap might join Minnesota. We'll talk about that eventually, because that is my... I'm going to go apeshit crazy out of joy, because if that happens. If he leaves as well, what's left? I would even go as far as saying the East is so weak that no player in the Eastern Conference, even including LeBron, should be an MVP candidate next year, because it would just be too easy.
You're just beating up on, beating up on the JV team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah, let's try to spin this positively for Indiana fans. I know it's going to be tricky, but...
Yeah, thanks.
Is there any chance Victor Oladipo turns out to be the prospect we hoped he was coming out of college? And then Sabonis too. Like, is he a good fit next to Miles Turner? Do they, you know, why did they do this deal? Basically, what could appeal to them about these two prospects?
That's a very good question, Brian. I will say that I liked Oladipo coming out of college. I kind of thought he'd be a good Spur, honestly. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's still a chance. He is still a young player. It's a little disappointing, the inconsistency in shooting, you know, so far, that he hasn't made more strides there. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, you get him. And I don't know what Indy's player development system is like. That hopefully they can get him in there this summer and get him to be a little more consistent in that area. Same thing with defense. Like, I felt like he could be a good defender. Maybe that's still in there because, you know, he really worked that end in college. So Sabonis, I think, could be a good fit. You could maybe stretch the floor with him, hopefully, theoretically, outside of Miles Turner there. But I don't know. I mean, that's what's weird. Like you guys said, I was hardly able to check my phone at all at work yesterday, but I saw the report pop up about the picks being offered by the Celtics. And same thing as you guys. I was like, yeah, that didn't happen, you know, but maybe it did. But on the other hand, it's like, well, maybe does Indiana not want draft picks? Maybe they didn't want any, because it's hard to imagine they couldn't get one.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah, that's what's also stunning about this trade. I mean, OKC, actually, I guess they've already traded away their 2018, because that was what was included in the Ricky Rubio deal, and their 2020 first-round pick. So the earliest they could trade was 2022. So maybe that's why.
Like, they couldn't get it from somebody else, or else they just really wanted Oladipo, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we have to acknowledge some teams are just more interested in dealing in different ways. Like, when we had Mark Deeks and Mark Karen Silas on, Deeks raised a pretty good point that I agree with entirely. We were discussing the Jimmy Butler trade, and he said flat out the Bulls are just not very interested in draft picks. It's not a big priority to them. Like, look at what they did with number 38. They just sold it, right? And that's not the first time that has happened. Some teams are just not interested in building through different ways. Like, some teams are not interested in going the cap space route. Some are more inclined to go trading route. So maybe we've just seen, you know, two teams, Indiana and Chicago, just not preferring draft picks and just going for some sort of established talent, I suppose, like Oladipo for Indiana and Zach LaVine for Chicago. That's really the only reasoning that makes some sort of sense on some level.
Yeah. It's let's hope for their sake. I mean, I wrote a column last night about the Paul George trade for fantasy purposes, and I looked at Indiana's backcourt rotation right now. They have Monta Ellis, they have Lance Stephenson, they have, that's about it, Glenn Robinson. It's like, it is a horror show. So I'm hoping for their sake, like, they might install, I mean, there was talk before the draft that they were going to put Lance as their point guard. So maybe they install Oladipo as their nominal point guard and kind of split ball handling duties between him, Lance, Monta. Because, you know, he was arguably marginalized in OKC next to Westbrook, right? Like, he's not a good enough shooter, Sarah, as you said, to play an off-ball role. He needs to have the ball in his hands a lot. So playing next to the highest usage rate player in the NBA probably wasn't a great fit. So maybe, you know, there's hope. As you said, Sarah, there's hope he could turn into, you know, he was the number two pick 4 years ago for a reason. So hopefully for Indiana's sake, he goes back to where he played in college, gets that love and feeling back again, and turns into an all-star, and we could not make fun of Kevin Pritchard for the rest of his NBA career about this, but it's a weird, weird trade. Let's move on to Ricky Rubio, the other big deal.
A signing.
Oh, who?
Zhou Qi, the Chinese center, has joined the
Rockets.
Yeah,
nice.
Vogue has reported a multi-year contract. So it says the final structure of the deal is still undergoing final touches. But Qi will join the Rockets for the 2017-18 season.
I like that.
But
good,
I like
them.
Vogue threw in a little bit of shade here. It said Chi listed at 21 years old.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah. But okay, so the Rockets got a little bit of size. He was the defensive player of the year in the CBA last year.
All right. That's good. I like it. Okay. Yeah. So Ricky Rubio, other big trade yesterday, right after we finished recording, naturally.
Of course.
So basically they traded him for, I think it's a lottery protected OKC first round pick to Utah. Basically Utah had $16 million in cap space that was expiring at midnight. They wanted to use that. They wanted insurance, you know, George Hill, they weren't sure was coming back. So they wanted to have a point guard in place for their Hayward, Joe Inglis pitches. So they got Rubio, and for Minnesota's sake, you know, we talked about it before, the concerns about shooting in a Rubio, Butler, Wiggins backcourt. Rubio was a trade, you know, a fixture in trade rumors ever since that draft day deal. So they clearly wanted, you know, they were willing to sell pretty low on him, because that OKC first round pick, especially after the Paul George trade, probably going to be, you know, at mid to late first rounder. They just wanted the cap space. So more, you just talk about Minnesota for a second, because so they signed Jeff Teague to a 3-year $57 million deal.
Yeah,
they still have a bunch of cap space. They're going after Paul Millsap. Did you like the Teague signing, first of all?
I was not overly enthused, but I don't hate it. What I really liked was the 3 years. Like, they didn't lock themselves up for four. I liked that one. And also, I think his value was actually pretty decent. It was under $20 million average per year. So that's decent in this day and age, in this market. He can shoot. He can pass when he wants to. He's a shaky defender, but when he really concentrates, he can actually become quite decent. And under tips, he might actually be more consistent. So I had hope for Patrick Beverley, personally, because that would gain them an explosive defender who can also hit the three, which is really what they need. They don't need all, you know, all the hoopla. They don't need a guy who can go into the paint and do all these things, because they have Jimmy, they have Andrew Wiggins, they have Kat. I mean, they have the players there, but I don't suppose it's a problem. Now they have a security blanket at the point guard position, a guy who can create his own shot, create something for others. It's a, like I said, a good deal. I don't mind it. I think they could have done better, but it's fine.
Yeah, I'm, as you said, getting him for under $20 million a year was, and for only 3 years, the third year's a player option. So, you know, feasibly, it's probably only going to be a 2-year deal, because at that point, he may opt out and try to get one more big, longer-term deal before he turns, you know, before he goes south. And at that point, the salary cap might is projected to be another $9 million higher or so. So maybe teams will be more willing to spend. But yeah, I mean, he's a better shooter than Ricky Rubio. Rubio, I think he's a career 31.5% shooter from three. Teague's in like the 35-ish range. So
Rubio's are like all wide open, right?
Right. Yeah. So I mean, Teague, not as good of a passer, but you have Jimmy Butler now, so you don't necessarily need a guy to play on the ball all the time. Like, Teague is more able to play off the ball than Rubio was. So yeah, I mean, fit wise, when I saw the trade at first, and then immediately leaked that Teague was like the heavy favorite to sign there, you know, I was like, oh, that's I don't know if I like that. Like, why not go after George Hill, or why not, you know, Kyle Lowry speculation started immediately. But for the price they got him, I mean, if George Hill was willing to take around there, I still think they should have gone the George Hill route first. But if not, like, if Hill was not willing to sign for under like $25 million a year, then yeah, you got good value for Teague. Sarah, I'm going right back to you about the Western Conference, because now, you know, even if Hayward leaves, you have Ricky Rubio in Utah, you got Rudy Gobert in Utah, we have Lob City 2.0 coming to Salt Lake City. How do you like Rubio's fit with the Jazz?
I like it, even though it's kind of funny. He's almost as far on the other end of the spectrum as a point guard can be from George Hill. You know, they're very different, but I think he fits there well, too. Kind of sad. They kind of give up a little bit of their crazy length that they had, but Of course, George isn't gone yet, but we're operating under the assumption that he's probably not going to be there. Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah, I like a guy who can distribute, get into the paint a little more. Unfortunately, yeah, not as good a shooter, but I think they'll be all right. It's just, you know, we have to wait and see how it shakes out if Hayward comes back or not as well. That'll all have an impact. But like you said, Gobert's going to get all he can eat, so that'll mm-hmm. be fun. Maybe his scoring takes a punch this year. That'll be fun. Yeah, I like Rubio's fit there. Teague, same as y'all. I wasn't sure about that one. But, you know, even though maybe would have liked the fit of maybe a Patty Mills or Patrick Beverley, as Morton said, George Hill, I think Teague can do some of the same things. Like you said, better shooter, obviously, than Ricky. It'll be fine for him to be off ball. And I remember reading an article, like, few years ago when he was still with Atlanta, where he talked about kind of learning how to be a point guard more and under Bud and passing the ball more. So I could see him settling into a nice role there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't need to be, you know, in Indiana, he was their number two, number three option, I guess, depending on how you feel about Miles Turner. But now, you know, at best, he's number four offensively. You know, Towns, Butler, Wiggins are all ahead of him. So that should relieve some scoring pressure from him, which will be nice. He can, as you said, he could focus more on being an actual point guard. And again, Jimmy Butler is a good enough playmaker where he's not going to have to do that all the time. It's going to be fun to see how Tibbs makes all of these new pieces fit together.
He's going to be the fifth option.
Oh, after they get Paul Millsap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so, man. That would be, Minnesota would be a top four seed in the West if they get Paul Millsap as well. That would be really,
on that idea. And I think also, that's partly why they got Teague, because, you know, that's Millsap is his former teammate in Atlanta.
Oh, you're right. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, they've got some stiff competition, it sounds like, from Denver. I forget who reported. I want to say it was Frank Cazzola of the New York Daily News did say Millsap is definitely leaving Atlanta, or expected to. And Denver and Minnesota are perceived as the front runners right now. So we have not heard much on the Millsap front, but I'm sure we will in the coming days. Let's move now to Blake Griffin, who, as we were, again, waiting last night for free agency to start, I think it was Sham Sharani of The Vertical was the first one to confirm the Clippers are signing him to a five-year max deal. It's worth about $173 million. Sarah, we talked about this a little bit on Friday's pod when we were previewing the Western Conference free agency with Kelly Scaletta, but you were not there with us, so I want to get your take on Blake Griffin, five-year max for the Clippers after they just traded Chris Paul. You think that was a good idea, or are you a little hesitant?
Well, a little hesitant. Just, you know, it is a little risky just because of his injury history, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I feel like you kind of have to. I mean, you lost Chris. You want to try to hang on to Blake. For Blake, too, I'm excited. You know, I kind of want to see him have, you know, everyone talks about have it be his team, you know, his franchise. I think he can do great things if he can stay healthy. There was a small part of me that kind of wanted to just see him get a change of scenery, just get out of L.A., because, you know, he's made some not great decisions there. I know he enjoys the atmosphere of L.A., but
yes,
yeah, I would have liked to see him go somewhere quiet and just ball, you know.
Right.
But you know, everyone's talked about, you know, him having the ball in his hands more, kind of distributing, running a little bit of point guard would be fun. So hopefully we get to see that. Hopefully we get to see the Blake who's a terror in the open court, just creating all kinds of problems, mismatches for people who cannot guard him. That's what I want to see. There's certainly the potential for that. So ultimately, I think it's a good idea for the Clippers. You know, they got to be all in on that now. You still have one superstar, still probably, you know, got DeAndre next to him. They have always worked well together. They've been good friends. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth, I bring him up again, but Jonathan Sharks of The Ringer had a column the other day about point Blake Griffin, basically, how whichever team signed him next should kind of, as you said, let him run the point a little bit more, you know, handle the ball. He didn't have that opportunity necessarily next to Chris Paul, who's one of the best point guards of all time. But now Patrick Beverley, you know, he's used to playing off the ball, with having come from James Harden. So, yeah, maybe we do see a little bit more point Blake, which would be fun. And I was watching the ESPN, too. They had the Jump free agency special last night with Rachel Nichols and Ramona Shelburne and Brian Windhorst and Amin Alhassan. And Ramona basically framed it as like, yeah, they basically chose between CP3 and Blake, and they chose the younger guy. It was simple as that. Like, they didn't, according to Ramona Shelburne, they did not offer Chris Paul the 5-year max right out the gate. And that's, you know, for a player, she was saying, for a player of his stature, that's an insult. You know, he expects that kind of money. He just negotiated a CBA where he can get that kind of money going into his age 38 season. Like, he did that for a reason. So, you know, the Clippers were understandably hesitant about giving a guy who's going to be, you know, 36, I think, in the final year of that deal, a 5-year contract with the final season being $45+ million. That's, you know, that's a reasonable take. Yeah. But yeah, now they decided, you know, we're going to go with the younger guy. And wow. Right. Yeah. So Mort, we were talking about this yesterday. We all kind of settled on, yeah, they need to re-sign him. As you know, you framed it yesterday as like Denver's Nene. So
exactly, basically, hence why I watched them Nene, because yeah,
right.
This is Nene 2.0. This, yeah. I can't imagine they won't do this, mm-hmm. because where the hell are they going without Chris Paul? They
right.
just got a bunch of young assets. They mm-hmm. and who, like, for example, Montrezl Harrell plays the power forward position as well. I know that he can be flipped, but you know, you might as well keep him because eventually they have to start rebuilding. So right. They re-sign Blake Griffin not to lose an asset, and then they're going to flip him at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
Completely like Denver did with Nene. I don't see any viable option where it's like, yeah, we're going to keep him just because.
Yeah. Well, so where do you stand on the Clippers in 2018? You know, we've been talking about the West being an absolute bloodbath right now. I think it's fair to say Golden State, San Antonio, Houston, Minnesota are all definitely ahead of them. You'd probably put OKC ahead of them after the Paul George deal. After that, you know, depending Utah if Hayward comes back.
Right.
So then, you know, they are in a tier possibly with Portland, Denver, Dallas, New Orleans,
Memphis.
Oh my god.
I know, right?
Wow, that sucks to be a West team. So, do you think, you know, let's say they have a starting lineup of, I mean, JJ Redick is gone effectively. Yeah. Woj has been saying that last night. He met with the Sixers. He might get interest with the Nets as well. So their starting lineup probably looks like Pat Bev, one of Austin Rivers, Lou Williams, or Jamal Crawford. I don't know. Wesley Johnson, I guess, is their small forward. Blake and DeAndre. They have Sam Decker. They have Harrell. They have Crawford and Rivers. They have Sweet Lou.
Yeah.
Do you think they're a playoff team?
No.
No. I can talk myself into it. I guess it depends on.
Was the key. Like, he made yeah. everything function because of his long-range shooting. Like, Chris Paul actually had an option on the outside there. Now Chris is gone. JJ is gone. What are you going to do? Like, kill teams with 5-foot shots and alley-oops?
Yeah.
And Austin Rivers? I mean, come on. No, that's on the bright side, you know, Austin Rivers can go all Kobe now. That's fun.
Yep.
Like, hey, Dad, watch this. I'm going to do, like, this sick fadeaway. Dad, are you watching? Dad, come on. Oh, it's going to be awful. It's just going to be awful. And by the way, you just made me think of something, Brian, which is kind of terrifying. Since the West is so deep, we mm-hmm. are going to see a lot. We're going to see 7 teams from the West miss the playoffs, even though they're going to be significantly stronger.
Ooh.
Meaning that's 7 teams that's going to go in the lottery. meaning they could potentially get even stronger. This is a bad route for the NBA. Ooh. You need to do something now, because if you have strong teams who are like 10 games better than Eastern teams also competing with them in the lottery, then that's just a poor formula, because they're going to get better. They're going to get a lot better.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, if you add... Oh, man. Yeah, if you add a top 10 pick to New Orleans or Dallas or... Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. All right, let's move on to the New Orleans Pelicans. Speaking of New Orleans, they, Saturday morning, agreed to re-sign Drew Holiday to a five-year deal worth at least $126 million, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN Now. It includes bonuses that could push its value to $150 million, also contains a player option for the fifth year. So, Sarah, this is another guy we brought up in the Western Conference free agency preview yesterday.
Well, no big difference there, Brian.
Right, no. And we all basically settled on it's a lot of money, but they almost have to do it. How do you feel about the Drew contract?
Well, that's one of those where I was looking to the more savvy folks like you guys on contract talks, because, yeah, I mean, it seemed a little steep, but... I could understand that, you know, felt like they needed to do it. I definitely thought he was going to end up somewhere else. We talked about him as an option for, I mean, you thought he'd be good with the Spurs or any number of teams. So I get it. I get wanting to retain him. You know, they're going to have probably a little bit of a pressurized window trying to make this Boogie AD thing fit next year. People aren't going to be very patient with Coach Gentry. So, yeah, I get one hang on to your point guard. Drew's a talented player and, you know, was a rough situation last year with what happened with his wife. So happy that he's back and everything's okay there and he can play out the season. I get it. I understand, like you guys said, you know, feel like you kind of have to do it. I don't know. I'd love to see if he was getting other offers from teams, what they were. Mm-hmm. You know, how close it was to what he ended up getting there. But
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it'd be fun to see if the Pelicans were, I want to say, bidding against themselves, because I'm sure interest in his services would be pretty high if they thought he was going to be actually be gettable. But right. Yeah, I mean, more, you predicted 5 years, $110 million yesterday.
It was much worse.
It was 5 years, 100?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, yeah.
So when I saw the initial... like 126, I was like, oh, okay, 26 million off, that's not good. And then with potential bonuses, 50 million off. Okay, so I was pretty wrong about that one. Did not see that one coming, honestly. Did not. I thought for sure that because the Pellies did right by him, he would take significantly less. But you know, it's, look, let's not fault him for that. Like, yo, go get your money, dude.
Right. Yeah.
That's just fantastic that he can get that kind of dough. And Drew, you know, if you're listening, this podcast, just $1 million, bro. Just, you know, production costs and what, it's through the roof, dude. So no, I mean, probably a little bit high. But like you said yesterday, Brian, what could they do? Because if he walked, they couldn't upgrade externally at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you would have to play each one more as your full-time point guard, more or less.
Yeah.
Like, you had to retain him. He's the clear-cut third best player on the Pelicans. So, yeah, they were out of options. And they ponied up. To their credit, they ponied up. What really hits them is the fact that they spent all that money on a guy like Solomon Hill.
Mm-hmm. And our boy Etuan Moore.
Yeah, no, Etuan is good. He's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he'll have a better season this year than what he did, like, in his first year with New Orleans. So he's solid. He's a solid two-way guy. But, you know, and the Omer Asik contract as well. It's just there's a lot of dead weight money on that roster that they probably should have changed that if possible. But I think they tried. I don't think they're movable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hope the Ashton contract. Maybe, I mean, we've been talking about teams that should accept salary dumps. You know, that's a good one.
Yeah,
but as we said yesterday, I mean, I think they had about up to 13 million in cap space. So basically what Patty Mills signed for. So, you know, we either get Drew Holiday or we get a guy like, you know, a guy who's probably best suited as a backup point guard, as our starting point guard, they really didn't have a chance or a choice. But, you know, to Drew's credit, I think he was eligible for 5 years, $172 million. I think the same contract that Blake was. So, you know, yeah, this is a lot of money, but he took close to, what, $45, $46 million less than he was eligible for. So,
yeah, but he ain't no Blake, though. Like,
yeah,
I
right.
mean, that's really the thing. I mean,
right.
We spoke about this yesterday as well. Like, just because you can't offer a max, like, now the league has to be a little bit more conservative. Financially speaking, they can't just throw around Moskov money, Luol Deng, Joakim Noah money, Evan Turner money. I could go on and on. Jan Mahimi money. Like, those contracts, I don't think we're going to see them this year. Thankfully, by the way.
Yeah.
Chandler Parsons money.
Right, yeah. I mean, they're lucky in a sense that Anthony Davis did not make the All-NBA team last year, because then that saved them about 18 or 20 million, I want to say, somewhere around there. So, you know, if you think of it in terms of, like, how much cap space is allocated to Drew plus Anthony Davis, and then, you know, just shove 20 million of Drew's money over to AD, then, like, 5 years, 100 million is completely reasonable for him. So I don't hate this deal for the Pelicans. Sarah, as you said, I would love to know what other teams were offering. I think the most they could offer was in the neighborhood of, like, 4 years, a little less than $130 million. So they could have offered the same amount of money on one fewer year. But
new signing.
I don't know. Who?
David West is staying in Golden State for a year, and it will be his last.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice. Yeah, that's not a surprise. God, I'm so bummed. Like, I stayed up last night till 2 a.m. Like, I was really expecting some stupid deals to happen right away. Because last year, you know, within the first hour, we had Joakim Noah, 4 years, $72 million to the Knicks. Yeah. We had Timofey Mozgov, 4 years, $64 million to the Lakers. Like, kudos to GMs for having a little bit more fiscal restraint this year, because maybe they saw, oh, that Mozgov deal was so bad, they had to salary dump D'Angelo Russell just to get off of it.
Kudos for not being idiots is basically what you're saying. Right.
Yeah.
It's a little sad, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay, you guys, you know, not you specifically, but, you know, you elected Trump, so, yeah.
Right. That is true. We got what we deserved, I guess. Okay, so let's now, I mean, it's a weird transition because I just said there weren't really any egregiously bad deals, but let's talk about the best and worst deals from the first 12 hours of free agency. So, Mort, what was your favorite deal so far?
Oh, there are probably two. Patty, first of all. Like, I love that deal. 4 years, $50 million. I mean, that's just right up, you know, the Spurs alley. Get a guy who is very, very good at a cheaper than market price, sticking around because of loyalty. He's going to be great there, as he has been so far. And surprisingly, Cristiano Felicio's contract with the Bulls is one that's pretty decent. $32 million over 4 years. I know a lot of guys were... you know, on Twitter, like, who is Cristiano Felicio?
Right.
The first comment I had to that was, you know what? You don't watch the NBA. Just move on. Second of all, he's a surprisingly athletic center. Like, he looks chubby, and he is, but that doesn't stop him from catching oops and finishing above people. He's got a very fluid jump shot that could possibly extend to outside the 3-point line. Still is pretty inconsistent defensively, but when he has those games where he puts it together, he's actually a game changer. So there's a lot to like about him, and getting that, you know, getting that for $32 million in this market is completely fine, honestly.
Yeah, I completely agree. We talked about him, OSA, in the Eastern Conference free agency preview. And, yeah, you know, he's been under the radar for – he kind of busted out a little bit this past year. But, you know, it was really, really promising in limited minutes as a rookie. Yeah, I mean, $8 million a year, you know, for a guy who profiles at least immediately as a backup big sounds like a lot, but – you know, depending on what happens with Robin Lopez in the coming years, like, he could take over as the starting center someday. So
I think they should do that already because the Bulls are so bad, they might as well get worse. You know, just well, if they're going to compete for the first pick next year, which has to be in their plans, look at that roster. You know, you move Lopez and take on a shitty contract.
Mm-hmm.
An attached pick. Oh, wait a second, an attached pick. That means they have to give one back because it's the Bulls. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah, did you have any favorite deals from the first 12 hours?
I quite like the Bucks locking in Tony Snell.
Yeah.
Like, what did, 4 years, $46 million, 44 guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Player option. I mean, you got a great long guy for your defense. He really stepped up last year once he got there. 3-point percentage rising. So I think he's just going to have even more confidence. And he's going to be part of that. I always call them like the team that constructed their roster as if it were a literal arms race. Mm-hmm. So he's added to that leg that's just terrifying to try to score on. So I think it was great that they were able to hang on to him for that price too. It's a good price for both him and the team.
Yeah. So I was talking with the guys who run NBA assets with me last night, and they're like, you hope Tony Snell sets the market for a Robert Covington extension?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, please God. If, you know, because Deeks, in his giant offseason manifesto that everyone should go read, check out shamsports.com for that, mentioned 4 years, $38 million as a fair price point for Covington. And I was like, dude, no way. There's no way he's getting, like, you know, Evan Turner just got 4 years, $70 million. If I'm Robert Covington's agent, I'm printing out Evan Turner's contract, Kent Bazemore's contract, and saying, we're not signing for a penny less. But, you know, maybe that was my hope, that teams would be a little bit more fiscally prudent this year. So, you know, a guy like Tony Snell getting, as you said, $44 million guaranteed, $46 on top. Yeah, hopefully that kind of restores the price for those 3-and-D wings where, you know, they're not getting close to $20 million a year. So, yeah, for that reason, I like the Snell deal a lot. More, as you said, the Patty Mills deal is great, especially given their uncertainty with point guard position. Mm. I was going to say the Nene deal. So this is a weird situation, right? So initially it was reported as 4 years, $15 million. Some cap experts on Twitter last night were like, wait a second, that violates the over 38 rule.
Yeah.
And turns out it did. Bobby Marks of ESPN confirmed that it did today. So now I'm seeing a report, I think it's from Mark Spears a few minutes ago, who says Nene is pissed that he lost that extra $4 million and he's back to square one in free agency. So I don't know if the Rockets... It sounds like he actually might not be in agreement with the 3-year. It would be about 3 years, a little less than $11 million.
Yeah.
And if the Rockets do get him to that deal, stellar. That's a great value for him. He's going to provide some much-needed depth off the bench. He was great in that role last year. But I can't. I guess I can't use that deal as a favorite. So I'm going to cheat and say the Paul George deal for OKC. I don't think, even if Paul George leaves next year, like, yes, there is a risk that Paul George leaves. In theory, just making a big baller move like this incentivizes Russ Westbrook to sign that supermax extension. And if he does that, then maybe Paul George has more incentives to stay. B, even if both Russ and Paul George walk in 2018, you got off of that Victor Oladipo contract. That's insane. Like, they effectively flipped Serge Ibaka for Paul George, right? Because they traded Ibaka for those two guys and Ersan Ilyasova last year. And then they just shipped those same two guys with Oladipo on his big contract now.
Yeah.
Or Paul George. So, like, when you frame it that way, who would not trade Serge Ibaka for Paul George, right? Like, especially Ibaka was going into a contract year. Paul George is now in a contract year. So kudos to Sam Presti. We were talking in the offseason preview yesterday. We were kind of saying, like, you know, OKC is almost in luxury tax hell. There's no clear way out. Like, how does this team get better? We just got our answer last night.
I'm starting to get worried here, by the way, because I just realized something. Both Paul George and Russell Westbrook are LA boys.
Mm-hmm.
So you get an LA boy who is considering going to Los Angeles next to Russell, who is a former UCLA-er, was born in Long Beach, I think. Like, those two could easily plot all season long
to go to Lakers.
Let's go home. Yeah, let's go home. Like, that, it just takes one little spark, like one text message after a bad loss. Like, right. Yo, bro, let's go home. Yeah. Let's go home.
I mean, there is a big risk there. I mean, you know, there is a sizable chance, I would say, that Paul George leaves. Not as worried about that with Westbrook, but hey, it's possible. I'm in on that, if only to see LeVar Ball's reaction.
Oh, yeah, Lonzo.
Right? Yeah. Like, Lonzo's, they would definitely sign and trade for one of those guys, and Lonzo would be coming back deal.
To an empty OKC roster. This is so evil, because I don't mind Lonzo, but I just want LeVar to suffer so much. Right. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, the reports came out last night. Apologies, because I don't remember who reported it. That they're looking into, I think it was Chris Haynes, actually, of ESPN, that they're looking into Rajon Rondo, the Lakers are. And I am all in on LeVar Ball and Rajon Rondo together for 1 year. Like, I actually like that fit conceptually, because, like, Rondo, get him on a one-year deal, have him there as, like, a veteran mentor for Lonzo. You know, on paper, that's actually a good fit, but then the LeVar Ball, add that to the mix, and now it's, I just feel like there are fireworks guaranteed to go off. It'll be like the 4th of July all year. All right, so we, you know, again, no egregious Mozgov, no Evan Turner, Kent Bazemore deal signed last night, but more, do you have any deals that stuck out that give you pause?
No, not really. The NBA has done pretty well. I mean, look, to those who don't know, our listeners, before every episode, Brian does this fantastic work of just putting an email together with all the segments. Like, he's our point guard. And he rarely makes mistakes, but today he did. So I woke up to an email that said that Nene had been signed to $50 million over 4 years.
Yeah.
And I was about to lose my you-know-what, because that would have been a horrible deal. But, that's really it. I mean, I'm not seeing any bad deals out there. What I'm seeing, which is negative, is that the Spurs and George Hill kind of broke off talks, which is like, that was not what I was hoping for. I had him pegged as coming back to the Spurs, especially after the Ricky Rubio trade last night. Mm-hmm. So that's, if that counts, I'm going to choose that. You know, I know it's cheating, but you cheated earlier, so I'm allowed to, because I'm fine.
That counts. Yeah. I mean, that totally counts. Yeah. I'm likewise bummed that it sounds like George Hill and the Spurs are not getting back together. Sarah, any deals stick out at our, again, not as egregiously bad as Mozgov or Noah, but any ones that you are not fond of?
Not really. I mean, no, I mean, like you said, there's nothing egregious, thankfully. I know you like to watch the carnage, but...
I do.
I'm glad there's not been anything too bad this year. I guess we can get into this more when we talk previews later on, season previews, but I'm interested in this Paul George, Russell Westbrook thing. I want to see, kind of, you know, after a year of being the lone wolf, is Russ going to kind of mesh a little better with the guy who's kind of up there with him in talent? Or is he not going to be as interested?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Paul George, he was discontented most of last year. Is he gonna be happier this year? You know, he said a lot of things after games. Like, certainly he's not gonna pull the shit this year, right? With Russ of, Russ knows I have to get that last shot.
right.
That's interesting, but I'm excited. I think it's a great move. You know that. It's similar to the Spurs with Kawhi entering his prime, and you don't want to waste it. You know, you got this MVP guy in Russell, and they went and made a move to, you know, try to get somebody next to him to help him out, you know, after the 1 year without KD. I did get to listen to some of the low post yesterday, and they were talking about how little flexibility they had. And I actually did think, I wonder if they're going to try to move Oladipo. But of course, never thought they were gonna move him for Paul George. So that's exciting.
Yeah, it's unreal. As a Russell Westbrook fantasy basketball owner in a dynasty league, I'm kind of sad that it happened because I liked Russ's triple double onslaught. It was fun having that for a year, and I guess it was also I went up against him in fantasy finals for FanMag actually, and that was awful. Because the team I was playing against, like on paper, I was much better. But then Russell Westbrook was putting up like 55-point triple doubles because that was at the end of the season when he was, you know, trying to clinch that MVP. So, I'm bummed we're not going to see triple double every night, Russ. But I'm happy for him that he has a fellow superstar back in the fold. I would have liked to see, you know, if the Pelicans could have gotten Drew for a few million less, that would have been great. But like, I'm not, that contract doesn't bother me that much, especially again, if you frame it like, you know, Anthony Davis didn't get the Supermax last year, pushed 20 million over to pretend he did. And, you know, 20 million a year for Drew Holiday is completely reasonable. I thought I was going to hate the Jeff Teague signing more than I did, but again, 3 years, player option in the third year, like it's not as painful as it should be. I mean, there's really kudos to GMs. Like, you learned your lesson after the huge spending spree last year, because we were talking about this yesterday, Mort, how the cap is not going to go up percentage wise as quickly as annual raises, right? So it's not, there's not going to be an 8% jump in the cap next year. It's supposed to, they're projecting it at 102 million. So it's 99.1 right now. So, you know, the contracts signed this summer are going to increase more quickly than the cap will. So, again, good work to NBA GMs. I'm disappointed in all of you. I do like watching the world burn as long as it's not on the Sixers.
Oh, there's plenty of cap space left, Brian.
I know. Yeah. That's true. The Kings are still out there. So we'll see what happens with that. We'll come back in a couple days, catch up with all the big signings.
Should we talk about the released guys? Gerald Henderson, Rondo, Cannon.
Oh yeah, we could pour one out quickly for the Rajon Rondo era.
So they all got waived. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
To save money, obviously. Yeah. I think Gerald Henderson, he was at a $9 million deal and only $1 million guaranteed, so that was in the cards. I was kind of surprised to see the Bulls follow through with Rondo, honestly.
Yeah.
Because they were talking a big game about maybe keeping him around, and Bulls fans had also dubbed him the Tank Commander, so he would have made sense to bring back. But, no, I mean, They're going all in on Chris Dunn. Rondo had $14 million on his deal, $3 million guaranteed. They tried shopping him, couldn't find anything, obviously, because it's Rajon Rondo. So I'm kind of curious to see if Rondo even gets another NBA gig. I think he does. You mentioned LA previously, but it's kind of, I was thinking about this last night. Look at where his career is at right now. He was an all-star, an NBA champion, like a franchise-caliber point guard for the Celtics in that, you know, legends mold. Like the guy who everyone was going to, you know, buy a beer after he retired, right? Now he's looking for what, his fourth team in 4 years afterwards? Yeah. Like he's become a journeyman. It's so weird, like, to see some of those guys. Dwight, too?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's weird. Yeah. Weird times.
Yeah, I feel like Rondo is almost guaranteed to sign, you know, kind of a similar deal to what he had for the Bulls. Like, either just a flat-out one-year deal or a two-year deal with a team option where the second year has very little guaranteed. I would be very surprised if he gets two full years guaranteed. But, yeah, as for Henderson, I think the Sixers liked him a lot. I don't think the price was the problem. I just think roster spots are at a premium. Furkan Korkmaz is now coming over. Yep. So I think they basically waived him to create some flexibility on their roster. If they don't get a J.J. Redick, if they can't, like, you know, sign KCP and get him on an offer sheet, Otto Porter, same kind of thing. At that point, maybe they try to get Henderson back. But I honestly think they're going to save at least $20 million to do a renegotiation with Robert Covington. At least I hope so. I mean, Zach Lowe reported they were hoping to save some cap space for that. And, you know, the cool thing about that is, so they could sign him to an extension this year or renegotiate his contract and sign him to an extension. He's making $1.5 million this year, so, or 1.6, I think. So there is significant incentive for him to renegotiate and make $20 million. But the cool thing is you can decrease a contract. So if you renegotiate and extend, you could pay him $20 million this year, and then you can decrease that by 40% next year. So if they save a bunch of cap space, you know, they can use cap space they weren't otherwise going to use, give him a huge salary in 2017-18, which will incentivize him to sign and bypass free agency, and then drop it down to, say, $12 million, you know, flat rate $12 million for the next 3 years. So it's still a four-year, $56 million deal. Just I'm pulling these numbers out of thin air. This is not reported anything, just as a hypothetical. So, you know, that's why the Sixers are reportedly only going after one-year deals. It sounds like they really want to make their big free agent push next year, which makes sense given all the, you know, the talent on the top-tier talent on the free agent market next year. So, yeah, I'm knock on wood, I am hoping, I am expecting that they do something along those lines where they give Covington, you know, they're going to save $20 million for him, give him a huge salary this year, drop it down 40%. For the next 3 years. So in essence, it's still the same big contract he would sign in free agency. He gets that money a year earlier, gets to test the free agent market a year earlier as well. So we'll see what happens. Woj reported last night that the Sixers were in talks. I think they actually met with J.J. Redick. They reportedly really only want to do a one-year deal worth north of $20 million, but if Redick finds a 3 or 4 year deal, he's probably going there. Yeah. So we will see. Hopefully we'll get some madness over the next couple of days. And in our next episode, we can start making fun of GMs again. But until next time, just a reminder again that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles. So give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And check us out this year on FanRag Sports, at FanRag Sports on Twitter, for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Again, a lot of good free agency content coming out already. Summer League starts today, so we'll have plenty of that as well. I'm going to be doing fantasy basketball stuff throughout the summer. I've already gotten some columns out about the Paul George trade and Ricky Rubio trade. So for the fantasy fans out there, check that out as well. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by the full Dream Team again, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too,
Brian. Take care.